Love that. On this week's Our Beer Could Be Your Life, we sit down with Nick Tales of Horse Hands, someone that I have been friends with for way too long in this scene, who I admire as a guitar player, and learned that he also writes songs vocally first, which I find insane. How are you boys doing today? Joe, how are you?
I'm good, buddy. I like how you say you've been friends with too long, friend for too long. So maybe as a tease, maybe your friendship is over at this episode, and your friendship transfers to me, and Nick and I become best friends and start our own band, Pony Hands. You'll have to listen and find out and see if any of that happens.
Probably will.
Yeah, it sounds ideal. How you doing, Dennis?
Good. How are you guys? It's been a long week, but it's over now. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. We're glad you're joining us.
Yeah.
You weren't on our last intro, so we're glad you're here.
I know. Everybody's devastated, I know.
Also, happy birthday to me, even though it's not my birthday. Lily ordered me this Anderson .Paak record last September for my birthday, and it arrived this afternoon.
Nice.
So nice. Very excited for that.
That's happy, a good record.
Happy belated birthday.
Think we're on to the next one now.
Yeah, basically. We were making bets of whether it would show up by my next birthday or not.
Nice.
So
nice. So that showed up today.
It showed up today.
You're gonna be listening to that this week, I assume.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna blast some Oxnard probably tonight. It's the black vinyl, which I'm very excited about. I always love it when, you know, you get
traditional
shit.
You like that traditional shit. Nice.
Yeah, that traditional shit.
Today I ordered a record that will be here by the end of the year. I ordered the Discord 200 box set, first 6-7 inches. On the last day that you could pre-order it, because I was trying to hold out and not buy this thing that I don't need. Then I was like, but I won't know if I need it until much later, so I'll just buy it now, just to be sure. So,
yeah.
I saw that, and I was like, it, much like buying singles of comic books, like, I'm old. I don't like 7 inches. I'm a trades, and I need full-length records here.
Well, yeah, I feel you on that. I own this music in other formats, and I own this music. Or I could stream this music right now without waiting for this box set to come. But I heard Ian talking about the love and care that went into this thing and to the whole process of going back to those first six records they put out and what went into those records and what came out of it, how they each one funded the next one. And I don't know. I was just like, you know, this is a record label that makes me happy. And they always are so nice when they send stuff, and they're very prompt and communicative. How could I not support Discord? So.
Nice. One of my new favorite bands, King Buffalo, just released a new album last week, The Burden of Restlessness, and it is awesome. And I also just purchased that on vinyl, even though I've been listening to it on Spotify all week. It's so good that I kind of had to, and it's one of those albums that like translates really well to vinyl.
You don't really hear the ska riffs until you hear them, you know, in the groove, I assume.
Obviously. Yeah, exactly.
It must be ska music.
It's psychedelic metal ska. Yeah.
Yeah. The classic.
Classic.
You know, Dennis, we thought we were going to go a whole episode without talking about ska.
And you refused to allow that.
We didn't bring it up.
Wasn't our fault. But hey, it came up anyway. You'll have to hear it came up in a very interesting way, and I am very excited to hear the end product of the song that Nick references. So
nice.
That'd be very exciting to hear Horse Hands playing a ska song, I guess. More or less is maybe. Yeah, listen ahead. Nice. Guys, we've never had much opportunity to speak ill of beer on this podcast. I think we're pretty beer positive, but I am having something that I don't like, and I want to talk to you guys about it.
Do it.
Please do.
So our friend Sammer gave me a can of Anchor Little Weekend Light Golden Ale with natural mango flavor. The can art is the new Anchor can art, which I do not like. It is the color scheme of the Miami Dolphins of teal and orange, which I do not like.
Yeah. And the design is like straight up Sailor Jerry.
It is a little Sailor Jerry. I mean, I gotta say, I love one of the things, you know, before I get into the actual flavor of the beer, you know, it's, which is shouting 100 calories at me on this 12 ounce can in the front of it. I know. And I'm not consuming all those calories. I'll tell you right now, this is not, I'm not going to be drinking 12 ounces of this. I think one of the challenges with a beer like this, like it's a beer that's light and it tastes kind of like mango and it's fine. But like, I see the Anchor name and I think of Anchor Steam, which I really enjoy. And then I am unfairly holding whatever that I am holding up to the standard of the beer that I know they make that I would rather be drinking. That has more than 100 calories. And is a better beer. So Anchor Steam for the win. Little weekend, you know, it's not offensive. It's just
It's just meh.
Yeah, it's not for me. I don't like this mango, fake mango flavor. I'm sure it is kind of real mango flavor, but
yeah. Quote unquote real mango.
And I've had a lot of the Anchor Steam like new SKU stuff, and I don't particularly care for any of it.
Skew, you say? That's some industry talk, sir.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry.
I forget what it stands for.
Packaging.
Unit? Something unit.
Scannable. So I forget. I don't know.
Container units.
Container with container a K.
Container with a K.
yeah, hard K.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to ask you what you're drinking, so perfect segue.
Well, thanks for asking, Joe.
Nailed it.
I'm drinking a Ray Catcher by Us by Jack's Abbey. It's the I'm officially declaring this the new beer of the summer because it's very good. It's light, lemongrassy, but it like not to the point where it's like distracting. It's like very well balanced, and I really like this beer. And so does like almost everybody in production, which is pretty rare. Yeah, we all pretty much get behind this beer.
Can confirm you guys agreeing on opinions is not an everyday occurrence. So that does mean something.
Yeah.
It's like when somebody in production today was talking about a hazy beer that he helped dry hop. And he said to me, you know, it's fine. And I was like, wow, that's like, that must have hurt you to say. Mm. And it actually means a lot that you said it was fine. He's like, yeah. I don't like it, but it's fine.
What about you, Matt? What are you drinking?
I am drinking some just straight Long Trail, which I bought a 6-pack of Long Trail Ale for the Oh the Humanity pod, and I still have some kicking in the fridge, and I'm drinking it in the most fancy glass that Joe Conley bought me as a ode of, like, this is not the right glass for this beer by any means. A nice, like, square... basically like cocktail martini glass.
I'd say that's more of a trapezoid for everybody playing the home game.
I mean, to be fair, I bought that for your pregnant wife.
Yeah, no, please don't tell the podcast audience about me giving 3 ounces of beer to my pregnant wife.
I mean, I didn't tell. She's not on this pod drinking. If she's drinking in the other room,
and she very rarely listens because she thinks it's hard enough to listen to me in real life. She does not do it on her free time.
I don't think Rebecca knows what we do in here or what this is or how to get access to it. So that's perfect. Yeah. Well, it's okay. I like Long Trail, and I'm glad you brought a 6-pack of it because that's a way to support a brewery you like.
I still like this beer. This beer is still very drinkable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I go camping like once a year in Vermont, right down the street from their brewery. And so I go pop in there whenever I go up there. Obviously not this past year because the world ended, but I love going up there.
But it's back temporarily before the climate kills it.
Exactly. We've got a couple years until the apocalypse. Can't wait.
Hell yeah. Well,
yeah, so we'll during those couple years, listen to some Horse Hands because they are fantastic. And Nick is a very good guitar player who, when we used to play live if I had to go on after him, I always shit on my guitar playing skills because he would go up there and like wail, and I'd be like, "I'm gonna play some power chords. Here it goes." But I think that's just my personality of being self-deprecating.
Yeah,
I think
even though I'm a fine guitar player,
that should be a capital F. But I heard your lowercase.
Yeah, no, that was a capital F. I think I'm a pretty damn good guitar player. I'm not a great guitar player, but I'm pretty damn good.
Yeah, you are. I mean, I know.
Yeah.
I believe you. I think Nick puts you in a specific spiral of self-deprecation because you do say at some point in this episode, like, fuck my skills or something.
Fuck everything I do. Again, that's just me like being self-deprecating for trying to make humor. Yeah, that's just what I try to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you do. I can see how with the complexity of what, you know, how Nick filters what he's trying to say through his playing, how that is imposing, because it's definitely complicated sounding and not like really anything else. We tried to put it in a box a little bit with Nick. I like his description of what it is. I'll let him unspool it because I think the description of how he hears his music is better than anything I'm going to say. But man, I really enjoyed getting to listen to them and introduced to them by getting ready to interview Nick.
Yeah, I think his music is fantastic. I have for a while, so I was very glad to get him to come on here. Even though I think he didn't feel he was worthy to come on, which is ridiculous because we'll literally interview anyone that's willing to talk to us. Send us your submissions. Come on.
Yeah. And we need demo tapes of you, your interviews.
Yeah.
Preferably mailed to Dennis Betamax form, please.
Betamax. If you mention form, yeah. Cutting out your peas, if you mention you own a pop filter, there's a better, you're going to go to the top of the queue for Dennis.
Oh, yeah,
for
you can sure. Actually replace me.
Yeah.
He's still waiting for somebody to do that.
Yeah, basically.
I also think that this might be the first guest that called Dennis out by name before we brought you up.
Wow.
He's nice. Like, oh, Dennis will get it. Like, that's right. You know, you were a listener to our thing.
Nice. Yeah.
Anyways, I guess enjoy this interview with Nick Tales from Horse Hands.
Yeah, I guess.
I guess.
You can be self-deprecating about your shit. Enjoy this great interview that myself and my friend Oz gave. A great, fine, good interview.
Dennis, cut out what I said and just use what Joe said. It'll roll in perfectly.
You know what? You know what? You don't have to enjoy it. We're not your mom. We're not telling you how you live your life.
That's true. Okay?
All right. The ballast feigning cosmos apprehension. Well up a dialogue, spring bed, three-eyed, HMO blue. Leave it all alone, so can they don't hear a sound at all. Bathe with the dissident, the pants would have had a messy bird last night.
Somebody say something.
Something. Ooh, hey.
All right. Sorry about that, guys.
In your ears. It's all good. We caught this perfect audio.
Oh, wait. This is like a part of it. Shit.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. This is the whole thing. It was great having you on. Yeah. We will talk to you.
Yeah. Later. Thanks so much for being here.
That's fantastic. All right.
This is our beer could be as awkward as fuck. And that's the entire episode.
I knew I was going to get something wrong. I was so proud of myself. I brought like all this stuff. I even got a pop guard for our friend Dennis so he doesn't have a conniption.
Thanks. Shouts to Dennis. You got new boots today at the brewery. They look very, very flashy. Ooh. Little dipped toes. Very good looking. What up, Dennis? I saw your boots. Fancy boy boots. Well.
They looked lovely.
Hey, Nicholas, are you Nicholas or Nick?
Nick or Nicholas, whatever works. But usually,
how do you say your last name?
Tells, like tells.
Tells. Story. All right. Cool. Welcome.
Thank you.
I like your shirt. You're wearing a great Scott Kickstarter shirt. Right. We are a audio podcast, of course, but I want to call out the good works that you and others kick some money to that lovely staff over at 1222 Commonwealth Avenue.
Yeah,
no longer. I know. But formally, hopefully somewhere anyways. In the future.
I know. It seems like it might continue though over at Regina, right?
It would be cool.
Yeah.
It would be really cool. So. We need venues of that size. It seems like we're getting more and more large venues, but you know, I don't want to say that you like weirdo music. I like weirdo music.
Oh, absolutely.
If you like Great Scott, you probably also like weirdo music.
Yeah.
And you know, can't fill a house of blues with weirdo music all the time. We need the little rooms.
I know.
Okay, I don't want to see weirdo music at the House of Blues. I want to see it in a small space. So let's hope that they get to continue.
Right.
And the looming O'Brien's closure in like 2 years.
No.
Don't even say it.
We don't speak of it on this podcast. That's like
the landlord has already said he's going to sell it when that lease is up. So.
Oh, no.
That's like once Great Scott is finalized, they have to now scramble and then find a place for O'Brien's, I believe.
Oh man, that's like closing my living room. That's terrible.
Yeah. I feel like me and you, Nick, have played many a show together at O'Brien's.
Yeah, it was like our practice space away from home. It was so nice.
right before you joined us, I was talking about wanting to make sure that I play my first and last show at O'Brien's. So I didn't realize that
your band has
time is short.
Your band has an expiration date.
Apparently. Cool, man. Well, do you want to introduce who you are and what you do?
All right. Well, I'm Nick Tells. I play in Horse Hands and just, you know, play music with friends mostly. So there's not much to tell. I've been doing it for like maybe I guess since like 96 or 97, so that's probably 23-24 years. I'm bad with math, but and I've usually kept it local. We've gone on a few tours, but yeah, there's not too much to tell outside of that.
Well, we're gonna ask more questions. Okay. I just asked you the most open-ended question possibly. Like, yeah, that's it guys, that was Nick from Horse Hands.
Yeah, if you could run down everything for us so we don't have to dig any deeper. I know you guys just did a set for Once, their virtual venue,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of the reasons why we asked you to be on. We are housing Once's audio equipment at the Springdale space. So, you know, we have a deep connection to those folks over there. We love those folks. So what was it like setting up and recording in a living room?
That actually wasn't a real living room. That was a set for some play that we practice right next to a little theater company, and I guess they were doing some play set in the 1940s, so they had like all used cigarette butts all around, rotary phones, and like pictures of James Cagney, and of course, you know, the liquor bar that everyone has to have in their house if it's, you know, in the bucolic setting of you know, suburbia. So I'm not sure what it was about, but it was really fun to just kind of commandeer that pretend living room and play for a little while. The weird part was, you know, we haven't played in like a year and our first show is just being recorded, you know, so it's just watching us kind of get all our hiccups out. But luckily it was on video. So we got to, one song had to be cut, but the rest, I think we all did in one take, but just knowing that we could do it more than one take was kind of helpful. But
you just came in cold and crushed that.
We practiced a little bit.
All right.
We'll cut that out. They came in cold.
They nailed it.
Nailed it. Yeah.
Dennis, make that cut right there. You're good.
We kicked the door in too, just for fun, just to make it real.
What was that the experience like of playing to what I imagine was a mostly empty room?
It was strange because a big part of it, you know, we don't record that often, so a lot of the reason we play is to go out and share it with people, but we like that sort of immediate reaction from the crowd. that you get with a crowd. So it was hard to sort of pretend that someone was there and listening. So we put that the sort of B-roll in there, and that was kind of that kind of we I was just kind of imagining what we're going to be like superimposing over ourselves. And you know, if we're kind of stood stock still for a lot of it, but I've kind of hoped that that extra little element added some kind of excitement, you know, because we weren't being very exciting. But
there was like a nice build of like sort of, you know, quiet at the beginning where it looked like you were showing people taking their seats, which I kind of appreciated.
Yeah, that was Rob spent our drummer spent so much time just trying to figure out what to put where. I went over there, but I mostly just drank his beer and watched him and said, yeah, man. But he did a great job and he really worked his butt off.
I feel like every time I talk to Dennis, I'm like, I want to help, you know, edit this thing. And like, it's the same situation. I'm going to go over and drink Dennis's whiskey and be like, you got this.
Yeah, I could tell.
Like, I'm going to watch.
Rob's like, thanks a lot, Nick. Just put the can in the recycling.
Yeah, well, I mean, people have had so many different modes of adapting in the last year in all walks of life. But obviously, you know, we talk about beer and music all the time. So, you know, did you guys have an opportunity to keep playing music and practicing together throughout the last year?
We did. I mean, we took some time off when it seemed really hairy. But as soon as we felt comfortable enough to sort of be in the room 6 feet apart with masks on, this is before we all got vaccinated. And it was a little bit of a risk, but we felt like we outside of the bands and our families, we didn't do very much at all. So we felt comfortable with each other, sort of being there as responsible adults, you know, but it still felt like a little bit of a, you know, risk.
Yeah. It feels almost like transgressive. Like the first time we were in a practice space together, we started during the pandemic. So we're, you know, masking up and feeling like we were doing something wrong. And it feels really good to like just go to the practice space now without a mask on and just play music.
The first time we took
our wives just like slightly fuming about us doing it, like, I don't love this, but we got to sort of allow it.
Yeah. No, we felt like we were taking the mask off. It was like graduating from flirting to full on dating. You know, it was like really, it was a big step.
Yeah. I know. We were having a conversation at work today about, you know, we've at work have made the like collective decision for our staff to wait for everyone to you know, choose to be unmasked for the most part until next Tuesday. So we're going to try to like get all of our staff together on Tuesday. And we're just talking about like what it's like to meet people and like all the people we've hired. And then also the fact that we haven't seen each other's faces.
Yeah,
like it's so long. It's crazy.
I work at a school and I still haven't, we still wear masks and we're going to for the foreseeable future. And there are new staff that I've never seen their whole face. They'll take it down for a second to have a sip of water. And I stare at them, you know, like, holy crap. But it's going to be like a whole new world next year if we're not wearing them. I imagine we will be for the first quarter or so, but it's so strange to just go through your day, get to know these people so well and just not know what they look like.
Yeah.
I like the mask because there's a little bit of like an emergency plan. This happened. Me and Joe went to Miracle of Science in Cambridge and we left and I didn't have my mask on because I was outside. And I like saw somebody that I did not want to talk to. And I was just like throwing this mask on, just like, they won't recognize me. It's like this beautiful little deterrence that I feel like is going to go away. And I don't love that.
That is nice. I've always wanted glasses or something. The best I can do is a hat. So if I've got a mask and a hat on, I'm like ready to go out. I don't know what I'm going to do after this. I'll have to get those fake like glasses that are just windows.
Yeah. Or the ones with the like slinky eyes that kind of bounce up and down. Yeah. Those are good because they can also obscure the face. Very good.
Get some Groucho Marx action going on in there too.
It did feel like, you know, armor that you put on outside in the world. And there's like times I just walked around my neighborhood, like masks, sunglasses, hat. Like, yeah. I moved to a new neighborhood. I'm like, I don't know who anybody is here. Like walking around here and like just slowly being able to remove those things has been, it's like a whole experience. I feel like there's grist to this of like the experience that we're going to be able to like turn into something creative, hopefully. Just the experience of unmasking and going back into the world and trying to hold close to what we didn't realize we felt was so dear.
Yeah. I also feel like it really helps that the weather's changing too. So just getting outside is really, it's good. Cause it just being trapped in your house or then going outside and just completely covering your whole body with things, including your face. It's just so hard to, you know, we're pack animals. It's hard to just sequester yourself away.
Absolutely. Did you do a lot of online, like you said, you work at a school. Did you do a lot of online learning in the last year? Was that part of your lifestyle?
Yeah. So it's an elementary school. So I was going between, like normally I work in special needs and I'll work with one student and kind of follow them around all day. But in that situation, it didn't really work out. So I would be with the whole class and I'm not really suited to like take on a whole class. It was fun and we had a good time, but I don't know if I was as effective as I wanted to be, you know? So it's nice to see them in person because that connection is really important, especially with young children.
Yeah, no doubt.
And to get back to working with just like my one or two students is really nice because that's kind of my wheelhouse.
Yeah, and I feel like that face-to-face connection is what's really important in that situation. I couldn't imagine like having to try to computer that situation.
No. I mean, these kids need like contact, you know, so it's good to be there.
And the people need rock and roll and beer.
Yes.
And that's
yes.
The other thing. We haven't gotten that back into society quite yet.
I found out that Guided by Voices is playing shows. We bought tickets to three different shows already. I got three Guided by Voices shows and then a Thundercat all within like 2 days. So
it's my bank account is about to be reeling in the next, like every day there's like something new being added where I'm like, oh, this or this, yeah. Or like,
I'm not even a huge Thundercat fan. I was like, that sounds fun.
Oh, he's super fun live. Actually, yeah, Oz and I saw him together.
Yes. Years he's ago. Amazing.
Live. Yeah. I know he's super talented and I like the songs I've heard. I've just never really delved very deep, you know, Tiny Desk Concert.
I mean, luckily for my wallet, my wife's about to have a baby. So like, I can't go anywhere in August and September, I think. So like, sucks to be you guys. I'm going to save all this money and not do anything fun.
Yeah, you'll be super excited for all the show picks and all the things. We're like, are you going to the show? Oh, wait, you can't.
It's going to be the worst. All I want to do is like, I think Slater Kinney Wilco is like 3 days before Lily's due. And she's like, you think I can go to this? And I'm just sort of like, yeah, let's give it a shot. Like, I want to go to it, so.
Oh, man, I was so bad. We had our first kid really, really young, and the day we got back from the hospital, I had a show at O'Brien's. I played it. It was like, I earned my scumbag
card. Interesting.
I earned my scumbag card that night.
We've been in a similar argument, having maybe received an invitation to do something around that the time of Mr. Oz's first year, so. Mm. Oz, I think you should also earn your scumbag card. You should figure out what the due date is, and that's the show.
September 1st it is.
Hell yeah.
I don't know.
Like, I'll just come from the hospital to the labor or vice versa, you know.
I think I'm hoping that after the age of 23, it's unacceptable. But at 23, it's fine. It's totally fine.
I have heard stories from a friend's Irish father that the tradition was the fathers just gathered at the pub together, got hammered. Well, whatever transpired at the hospital happened. And then they would go when the baby is born.
Yeah, the alternative.
I've had to watch those videos. I would much prefer that.
I think the alternative was drinking whiskey and cranking butts in the waiting room, right? They wouldn't even let you in.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want that like 50s, you know, lifestyle of just hanging out in the waiting room, waiting for him to be like, it's over. Like, cool, sweet.
And then you have the gall to pass out after your partner's going to have been through all that.
Just imagine the doctor lighting your cigarette. Congratulations.
Congratulations. You're like, oh shit, what?
So real diversion for a second. How many records did Guided by Voices or associated projects put out during the pandemic? Do you know the answer to this question?
I don't know.
It's more than one.
Oh, it's absolutely more than one. My wife actually just got a package of stuff. She got at least 12 CDs. Like, she still gets CDs because we're getting up there in age. But I mean, some were from last year, but most were from this year. I mean, it's crazy the amount of stuff. I can't even keep up with the band names.
No, there's, because I know Boston Spaceships was one, but then there's another one that came out in the last year.
Yeah,
that is another side project.
Yeah, I mean, I can't even remember the name of it. Like, I get all the, because everything's nonsense with Robert Pollard, so like it's just this word collage, and I'm supposed to remember the song titles and album names and bands. So like, I know the, like, yeah, I can't think of a single. We have them, but I can't think of the names of the bands and everything. I just know who's in it. I'm like, oh, that's got Doug Gillard, or that's got the guy from the DBs or something. But it's really hard to keep up.
I was exposed to them first in college by real fans of theirs. And so like B-1000, Alien Lanes, those are like,
yeah,
records that like hold a special place in my heart for where and when I heard them. And still when I see those friends now, they're like, they'll be like, oh, right, two records ago, there was like a three song cycle that's just like B-1000. I'm like, okay. Like, you can make me a playlist. It'd be very helpful to help me navigate this.
Yeah, I'm sort of still stuck in the kind of classic era. You know, it's hard to jump out. I liked, before they broke up for the first time, I think pretty much everything up until then. And then I sort of fell off. But I love going to the shows, and we get the new albums, but I sort of give them one run through, which I guess I shouldn't admit, or I'm going to get like attacked or something by the fans. People are rabid, man.
But the Guided by Voices fan club that collectively listens to this podcast is going to come after you. Oh,
God.
Yeah. If you're out there, James, sorry. I mean, some of those, he has an ear for a hook, right? And a catchy line or two. I really appreciate that. But he also, I feel like he could definitely do by an editor. Like, an editor would not be a problem.
Oh, yeah.
If he had somebody being like, let's use these songs and not all of these songs over here.
Yeah, but I think it's part of the whole thing. I think he wouldn't know what to do with himself. You know, I feel like it's like if you start going to the gym or something, if you skip a day or two, you just completely stop forever.
You know? Does it count as a B-sides record if you release three of them for your one regular record? I mean,
it's like mostly
B-sides. Just an additional record at that point.
It is kind of impressive though. If you look at, like, I don't know, a famous 3LP Sandinista, where the Clash were like, we're just gonna make three, and then you're like, well, I can tell you were really pulling shit out of your ass for the for at least a third to two-thirds of this.
Yeah, someone needs to step in and be like, this can be two, there's a couple things we can.
Well, I'm saying you have to appreciate the Guided by Voices. They can put a coherent record together. It's not like children singing songs that were on previous records on side D, right? They're like real songs that they wrote and recorded. So,
yeah.
Hey, good for them.
Even the ones I don't really like, I've put together pretty well.
Yeah.
But they just, maybe they don't hit me the same way because I'm older, and maybe it's, you know, the stuff that you listen to when you're younger sort of gets ingrained, but I don't think that's the case. But they're still.
We should talk more about your band.
Oh, sure, sure.
Bob's band. I listened to your band for the first time in preparation for this interview. And I said to Matt, I was like, oh, this sounds like McCluskey and Pavement, like, smushed together in a very sexy way that I liked. So that was my first impression. Oh, if that's
awesome. Yeah, I definitely like McCluskey is another big, big name for me. And, you know, of course, I was just listening to a Steve Malkmus album on our way to the White Mountains the other night. So I guess that makes sense.
So like, what you have, like, a really, it's hard to pinpoint the style that I would say that Horse Hands is, but like, what would you say if someone asks you, or when someone asks you, like, what kind of band you're in? How do you describe it?
Well, normally if it's someone like at work or something, I just say we're a rock band, you know? But if it's someone who's like you guys or someone maybe at a show, I don't know. I just say it's kind of like nervy indie rock kind of stuff. Cause yeah, that's been one thing. It's hard to, and it sounds kind of stuffy, but it's hard for me to really describe it. It's not because it's like so out of this world or anything, but it's just, I don't know what to call it. Like, it's just a bundle of nerves to me.
That's a great way to describe it.
Oh, okay. There you go.
That captures it in a way that I hadn't thought of, because I was going to describe this as somebody saying two indie bands smushed together is not really useful, but like, you definitely have this like skittering on the edge of nerves intensity.
Yeah, that like that I think. Nervous energy of starts and stops and stuff. Definitely, yeah. I can understand that.
Yeah.
And I don't, this isn't, I love your vocal delivery, but your vocal delivery can be really fucking weird at times.
Yeah.
Which I mean that in a good way. But I'm like genuinely curious, like, I feel like there's a point where everyone starts singing somewhat in what they consider normal. And then they're like, well, fuck it. I'm just going to do the weird shit that's in my brain. Like, when did that kind of click for you? I know that happened for me with my like shitty ass songs that I wrote. So
I think a lot of it happened because we'd always play these tiny little venues that had terrible PA systems. So the more like helium I kind of put in my voice, the more people could hear what I was saying. So if I could just make that noise over the music and they could hear some kind of like background instrument that was my voice, like that kind of worked out. But it's also, I think a lot of the music, it's just a lot of the things, the way we write is, the reason I'm in a band is because it's the way of expressing the things that I can't really express with words. So everything's sort of cartoonish when I start to play, like write a song or play anything. And it kind of turns into this whole sort of, like a pastiche of just every feeling I've ever had. And a lot of it's just like, you know, if someone asked me like, you know, are you the singer? I go, yeah, well, I mean, things come out of my mouth, but, but it's like, it's almost like, just like, I'm like, so it's a,
yeah, your voice sometimes can be like an extension of the drum kit almost. Cause there's like some noises and clicks that come out of it that, you know, there are words attached to it, but it's definitely the feeling of what's coming out that's more important.
Yeah, so it's all just a part of the whole vibe. Like, that's like, even the way I write songs is just like, how am I feeling? And then it kind of comes out like that, but I'm usually feeling very nervy. So you got this really nervous, like kind of anxious guy just making utterances over some sounds. So I don't put a lot of thought into like being super in tune, and we leave mistakes in the records. And I think that's all part of the whole thing.
I would imagine last year is a lot of fodder for nervous energy for writing processes. Then if you were somebody who writes through how they're feeling, I would imagine you had some feelings in the last year.
I have. It's big feelings, and I haven't really had too much of a drive to put them into song. But now that we're sort of breaking free a little bit, I definitely have that urge. So things are coming out. Like, I'll know I'm ready to start writing again when I take my phone out in public and start going like, nah, 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 nah. just see where that goes. So yeah, this whole thing. I mean, I don't like being dour. I always like throwing, you know, some kind of fun or poking fun at myself or whatever I'm talking about. So I've got to find a way to spin it so it doesn't end up being like a Bon Iver record or something.
I mean, he seems to do all right. I don't know.
He's all right. It's not the stuff that I'm like, I go to listen to when I'm, you know, down around in the summertime, you know.
I mean, that's kind of the saying, like, every musician wants to be a comedian, every comedian wants to be a musician. So, you know, if you're constantly poking fun of yourself, it's just part of that, like, you know, one to do one thing while you're doing another thing.
The guy who just called his songwriting shitty ass songwriting.
Look, I'm self-deprecating, okay? I don't like anything I ever do, regardless of what people say about
it. Well, the rest of us like it. At least I do. That's for sure.
Oh, thank
you. I'm not going to go on record.
TBD for Joe.
Well, I think it's interesting to explore like how, like what the process of writing is for you. Like, does it start as a vocal idea, or does it start as like a riff idea that you're singing to yourself that you explore later?
It kind of goes either way. A lot of the time it's me, like I'll get an idea for like a vocal melody in my head. And I'll think it's not, maybe not, I don't know if catchy is the word, or it doesn't seem like it wants to float above everything. So I'll try to turn that into chords. And I'm not really good at transposing things from my brain to the guitar. So it ends up kind of like perverted in a way. And then, so I'll get the chords that I took from that vocal melody I sang into my phone. And then I'll sing something else over that I think is a little elevated from that original melody. And that kind of brings me to a place where I'm comfortable sharing it with other people. Otherwise, I'll just sit down with my guitar for a few hours and see what sticks. and then it'll either be an instrumental or something that'll just kind of come to me for like a line that goes over the top. Usually I think of like I don't play synth or anything, but in my head it'll be like kind of a synth melody over the top, and I'm like, okay, and I'm trying to match the words to that in sort of like that Robert Pollard fashion. They don't always make immediate sense, but I do try to put meaning behind it, but that meaning can kind of change and morph throughout the song. So I could initially start singing about one thing and it goes to another, but there's like a tangential line that goes through it.
Yeah, and you are that line, if you follow it, is kind of your point of view,
right?
And you're the filter for these feelings into this sound. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's like if you're taking a walk, you'll start thinking about one thing, you'll end up somewhere else at the end, but you can find a through line. So that's sort of how I like to write songs. And it's great because you can be, you know, obviously like a little poetic about it. You have some freedom there. So you can just, if something doesn't fit rhythmically, you can make it make sense to you if you have to, you know. Like, why am I singing about pumpkins? Oh, it just kind of fits.
Wait, what song is about pumpkins? I'm going to let the regular questions happen, but...
We haven't gotten there yet, but I'll throw a pumpkin in there for you.
Is Am I a Strange Loop? That's the first song off Amble, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that? That's definitely got to be about, you know, just the loops of a pumpkin, right?
I mean, of course, yeah.
Am I breaking this down here?
Yeah, you actually nailed it. It was a band secret.
And how do those ideas change when you bring them to, so you guys are a three piece, right?
Right.
Do those ideas, like when they get presented to other people, do they take on a life of their own with their impact?
It kind of depends if I come in with a song fully written or not. There'll be times when I come in with a part and then we'll see like where that kind of goes together. Other times I'll come in with a full song and we'll just kind of, we'll definitely work to make it a little more interesting. And I'm not too precious about any one thing. So I'm willing to change. I mean, just like anything, like your feelings change, thoughts change. When you introduce new people, the dynamic changes. So yeah, it's nice to have that sort of democratic way of going about things with a band. But at the same time, I like doing solo stuff because you can just sort of do whatever the hell you want. And you don't even have to show anybody, even your band, which is nice. But yeah, no, that's part of the big draw for me of being in a band with other people, is that they can take it and reinterpret it. And that kind of core is still there, but you've got that extra like special sauce.
Yeah, it seems like you have a bass player and a drummer that do a good job of like adding a lot of texture. Also, I don't know if all the starts and stops and sort of waves kind of, do they form in you, or is it kind of a combination of all of you working together?
It's definitely us working together. And even if it's not, I'm thinking about who's in the band. We've had a ton of lineup changes and I feel like the music changes with the people. We change our name often when we didn't this time, but yeah, it's they, oh, I just lost my train of thought there. This is awesome.
Just some lineup.
We were talking stops and starts.
That's, oh, yeah. There it goes. That's those stops are natural because my brain just kind of farts out at me sometimes, I guess.
Yeah. What is the lifespan of Horse Sense? And you said you've been playing music since 96 or 97.
Yeah.
I assume not always under that moniker.
No.
But I could be wrong.
No. In around 2003, I started playing like the first sort of iteration of the band. So that was called Espontaneo, which I found out later after saying the name like 4,000 times. So we had a drummer from Gloucester and then my friend Justin and then our drummer left, Justin stayed. And then we changed our name to Pukka Argot. And we kept some of the old songs and we started writing new stuff. And then the drummer left. And I don't even know where I am right now. And then we got our Adam playing drums, and we kept that. And where am I right now? We kept that Pucca Argot name. I think I don't even know when we changed it. So we started a sponsor, we became Pucca Argot, and then we became Horse Hands. And in that time, we changed about like 8 different members. And that was that started in about 2003. But I think Horse Hands has been around for around 13 years now. So we've had that name, but we've had the songs for forever. Actually, we're practicing a song from like the first EP tonight. And that song I wrote for a ska band in 1999. So like, it's just like, I think I
wait, hang on. What ska band in 1999 are we talking about here?
It was called Crowd Control. Full horn section and everything. It was pretty fun.
And so a song for Crowd Control has lived a life. It's now, it can drink. It's over 21 years old.
It's crazy. It's
how did I not know this side of you? We could have been talking ska the whole time.
I've been skanking this whole time. I don't know why you didn't notice.
I've been, we've been seeing that. It's weird that we haven't asked about that. Next time we should do that.
Yeah, I heard you guys talking about ska before. You have kind of a contentious topic there. Some of you are just like disavow it, and the rest are pretty into it. But
not on this pod. This pod is 100% pro ska.
We are
all the time.
We are pro ska, but we deal with people outside of this pod. Sometimes people who are on the pod telling us that ska is bad. That's okay.
Oh, okay.
People are entitled to opinions. We, Matt Oz and I, we like ska a lot.
Yeah,
I'm trying to actively find a ska band as a sax player. So,
oh, really?
You know, it's kind of hard to be the linchpin of a sax band, of a ska band as a sax player. So,
I can imagine. You know,
putting it out in the world.
Nice. Yeah, I don't listen to much. Even back then, I didn't listen to too much, but it's so fun to play. And when you're a teenager and you're playing ska and everyone's going crazy, I mean, there's nothing more fun than that. You know?
So, no.
That was a great introduction to just playing music, just having all the, like, so much excitement and positivity. I still listen to Keysby Nights once in a while. The catch 20.
I was just going to bring up Streetlight Manifesto.
Oh, really?
Because I'm enforced a choice, and December 17th in Boston, you might see either Streetlight Manifesto or Drug Church across town. Drug Church is one of my favorite punk bands the last couple of years. And Streetlight, every time they come to town, there's a new reason why I haven't seen them. So
I haven't listened to much of that. I mean, I love that guy's voice. And I love Keysby Nights, but even the new version of Keysby Nights just didn't hit me the same way. So I guess that was my introduction to Streetlight Manifesto. And I never really went too far beyond that, except for like the errant YouTube video here and there. But those are usually like the old Catch 22 songs. I'm bad like that. But
it's true that something that locks into your, you know, who you are as a person, as a late teenager, you know, things that you hear that just kind of become part of you. And, you know, it's hard to shake those preferences.
Right. But so is there like a Streetlight Manifesto beginners like album or something that you would?
I don't know. I mean,
I feel like you've already listened to it. If you've listened to Keysby Nights.
Oh,
I
mean, well, then that sounds like worth giving a shot. I'll do it.
I would say I'd have to look up the names of the albums, to be honest with you, but there's a couple things that I really like. And I think that they do an opening song on a record particularly well. So I feel like if you pick up any of their records and you listen to the first song, you'd be like, all right, if you're in for like long compositions, like Somewhere in Between starts with We Will Fall Together. And it's an excellent, excellent song.
Okay.
So if you like that, maybe you would like more Streetlight Manifesto. I've actually read recently that they have taken to, in the course of their existence, kind of disavowing ska.
Okay.
And being like, well, we're not really a ska band. Sure.
Probably.
Maybe you're not. Who knows?
They've got to be pushing like 40 at least by now. I mean, those guys.
Yeah, because Keysby Nights came out in like 1996, right?
Yeah.
95, something like
it's
that.
It's old.
Yeah.
It's like for how young they were, it's like it's really amazing that the
some of that music is so fast. I was trying to learn, you know, bass runs off of that, and I'm like, these dudes are, some of them are, they're just playing straight like major scales, but they're doing them at
yeah
ridiculous speed.
Like I don't, is we're using a fretless bass there, like I can't tell sometimes it's
I think
like
some of it is fretless. Yeah.
man, I guess it's for good.
Sometimes streetlight is kind of like a panic attack because it's just so fast and it's just, I'm just like, it needs to let up for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. So like they get kind of blue meanies every once in a while.
A little bit.
Yeah,
we always get to Scott Oz. We try to not have Scott content.
This honestly was like, an unexpected turn.
It's almost Scott like is the gravity to which we.
I think I have this built-in part of myself that tries to just not talk about myself. So I'm like, let's talk about Scott, which is like,
you know. These guys like Scott. How about Scott? Huh?
Well, so it's funny. So there's like, I'm really excited for this group of people that I don't see except for at shows. Which, mm-hmm. Nick, you're one of those people, along right. with like Matt Scott of Harris or like Foster from The New Dumb, that I only see at shows. But as soon as I see them, I'm like, we're just hanging out tonight. Like, I see my other friends all the time. Me and you, like, I feel like every time we run into each other at a show,
yeah,
that's just what we end up doing. We end up talking for like 4 hours straight. But I had no fucking idea you were into ska. We had some other thing we could have talked to this entire time.
I mean, I know like five bands, but I was in a ska band. So that's my accreditation is I was in a ska band.
Oh.
Yeah, you're in the club.
Yeah, you're in though. We do not refuse members. We are pretty open.
We're actually, one of the guys in the band, I just randomly kind of, I texted him out of the blue and we started getting together and we re-recorded a few of the old ska songs, so I'll send you them if you ever feel like it. If you ever have some yes. free time in a quiet room by yourself where no one else would like just turn it off for you.
We're gonna do exclusive premieres from this podcast now. That's what's happening.
Yes,
it's cool. We're gonna the singer's in California, so we're gonna have him like do the old record it and send it over, and we'll just like mix it in ourselves, sort of thing. So we're trying to get as many old members to just get involved as possible.
That's fantastic. Yeah,
it's so fun.
I'm in. I want to hear it.
And we're doing it with our other band too. I don't know if you, Matt, you obviously remember Heron.
Yeah.
So back when I was in high school, I was in a band with Mike from Heron, and we started re-recording some of those songs too. So, which is pretty funny. Those are like whatever we thought metal was at the time, which is not metal. I don't know what it was. We thought we were like being like Slick Shoes or something, like a metal Slick Shoes, and it just turned into like something different. But it was fun and interesting. But I don't know if Mike's going to be interested in screaming over it, but maybe we can get some Oz action in there.
Now we're talking. Let me scream over some Heron songs. I would love to do
that. It wouldn't be Heron. I mean, we were called Eidolon.
Okay. All right.
And this was back when Mike was like 25, 24 years old. But he was
still in.
He was
still in, just knowing the people involved.
No, back then his name was Crazy Mike back then is what we all called him. And he would throw our amps around and jump off ladders and get completely nude at shows. So that's in your future if you wanna contribute.
You guys can do those things.
I've seen worse in the O'Brien's bathroom. So,
oh yeah,
that's
legendary. The old O'Brien's bathroom.
I want to bring up the fact that this is a beer podcast.
Yes.
So I'm going to ask you a beer question.
Absolutely.
What is a go-to pre-performance beer? If there is a pre-performance beer for you.
Pre-performance. Well, sometimes I usually start off with like something a little pricey and then move on to like the cheaper stuff. It was for a little while, it was like the IPAs and stuff like that, but I've really kind of come off that train. But after that, I usually go to like High Life or Narragansett. It was Narragansett, but that got like, that really weighed me down. So I moved on to High Life, but then I ended up like having like too many. So I had to try to find a balance. So I kind of balance.
My life is remarkably easy to drink.
Yeah, it's really, it's like water. So by the time I realize that I've had too much, it's too late. But at the same time, if I have like three Narragansetts, I'm ready to like just crawl onto the stage. And as far as prices, I've got like, at a place like O'Brien's, it might be like Allagash or something like that.
Sure. Somebody on our pod last week realized mid-sentence as we were talking about like basically kind of this question They're like, wait, I don't think I've had a PBR in like over a year because PBR was like show beer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like never buy it otherwise other than that. Are there any, I mean, are those beers kind of linked to performance and like being in a venue for you?
Yeah. Well, PBR is definitely, when I started going to Charlie Kitchen shows, I would always get a PBR and some waffle fries. Just go to town. It was either that and Lone Star for a while, but then PBR was like kind of weirdly, like almost like sickly sweet, and kind of got kind of like, I felt like bile when I started drinking. So I had to move on to something different. And then, you know, High Life kind of was like more of like a, almost like a Gatorade of beers. So I kind of went for that.
Yeah. The hydration, it's good.
Yeah.
It's, you feel like a lot of electrolytes there.
You feel like you're really taking care of yourself.
I mean, I think collectively, like we would get a 18 pack for practice and we would drink the all 18 at band practice. Cause it was also, we practiced in a room that was always 1,000 degrees. So.
Right.
You just, he's using the Royal Wee. He's in a solo project. So Matt drank 18 beers.
I'd go to the practice space by myself, drink 18 beers and write some sad songs.
That'll work. That'll do.
That's how I made the last Gambling Lamb record.
Nice. We've got some nice warm High Lifes waiting for me tonight at the practice space. See how that goes.
Oh, nice.
I got like a body temperature and just inject it into my face.
Should we talk about the beer you're having us drink tonight?
Sure. I had some too. I'm so glad I found it because it wasn't anywhere in Lowell, but I work in Newton and I found it there. But yeah, I always end up.
Yeah, so. North Coast Old Rasputin, definitely the first Imperial Stout I personally ever drank.
Yeah.
So why'd you pick this beer?
I picked it because it was the first like quote unquote fancy beer I've ever had. That and the Founder's Breakfast Stout, because before that it was all Lone Stars and PBRs and Narragansetts and High Lives. And then do you think the plural of High Life is High Lives or High Lifes? Like, is it like the Maple Leafs? I don't know.
I would say High Lifes.
I'm going to go with High Lifes. I'm going to agree on that.
Okay, we'll go for that. I mean, that makes more sense. So yeah, my brother, who he roomed with JC from Trillium, the guy who runs Trillium, and they started making their own beers together. So he was like my go-to guy, my brother, for fancy stuff. And he brought this to one of our like just like a family party once, and I tried it and I felt like I could taste like more than one note, which was nice. And yeah, I have like sort of a, I've got those, that kind of old man taste, like I love Moxie and like sardines. You know, so this fits in. If it tastes like wet cigar ash, like I'm in. So we so it's got that, and it's got the, you know, the coffee flavors. It definitely tastes like an adult drink. It's like, it's almost like back then, because I was like brand new to me, it was almost like motor oil or something. Like, this is awesome. I feel badass drinking this. And then of course, Rasputin looks just like Steve G. So that helps.
Yeah.
Steve G's a local guy who comes to every show with his partner, Tom. And I think they've supported us more than anybody in the world. So just seeing his like visage on a drink makes it, you know, taste a little bit better, I think.
I remember when, you know, like I first started, you know, I was in bands and then I like had like a 2 or 3 year hiatus where I like lived out in Worcester. But when I came back and started another band, like I felt like I made it when Steve and Tom showed up to one of my shows.
Oh, yeah.
And they like said that you were good.
I know.
I was like, oh, fuck. Like, Steve and Tom showed up and they appreciated us.
If they were the only people there, we'd be like, that was a great show. That really worked out. They're so supportive and like this so wonderful.
Right. Like I had this weird thing. I'm like, I want to be as big as like Trista Da Cunha. Like that was my goal because they showed up at every Trista Da Cunha show. I'm like that, I want to be that popular.
Yeah.
Which that's a reference that no one listening to this will get, but
oh man, I do. Those guys are incredible. Brian Church, and his voice is so out there. And so I'd see that I go to all those Tristan Da Cunha shows and those guys would be there. I'm like, man, this is like, I want to be a part of this. And then when they started coming to our shows, I really felt like I was a part of the club, which is really nice. And then we played their anniversary, and we tried to do a cover song from, we tried to do a Throwing Muses song, and I got so nervous that I forgot every single word. And I just kept apologizing while playing the song to them in their faces. It was like the worst experience. And it was at Gray Scott too. So it was like the best sound system. Me going, just trying to mumble the words out. And they know every utterance that that band has ever made. So, but they were very kind afterward. They were like, thanks for trying.
I noticed we have all chosen the same 12-ounce bottle option of this beer. But I do want to call out the fact that you may now buy 4 16-ounce cans of this.
Oh, that's bold.
You were so inclined.
That's a high alcohol content for such an.
You sure had mentioned that they exist, but I could not find them, which I was bummed about because I would have just for the experience of trying to drink a 16. This is 9%. I do not want to drink 16 ounces, but you know, I wanted to for the first time.
Yeah, that's great. They also have
instead, I'm going to drink 2 12-ounces tonight and I'm just going to, you know, regret everything.
I think they also have a rye version of this too. That might be even like more brutal.
They have some barrel age expressions of it. And I don't think I had a really early experience with this beer. I definitely had another Imperial Stout before this, but one of my early, like when I got into the like realm of trying to seek out individual beers and expressions, one of them was a barrel age version of this that I remember having for my birthday one year. And thinking I was like so fancy, they were like, we'll pull it out of the cooler for you and keep it out close so it gets closer to cellar temperature. I'm like, yes, of course.
Yeah. So what,
like, let me spend.
What temperature, like what, like a stout, like a, well, a beer like this, like what, do you put it in the fridge at all? Or you leave it like, what do you have like a process like before you drink something like this? Cause.
Well, ice cold is your enemy in this one. So like you talk about High Lives and how they
lives
that are high. We just coined that, so that's good. They can Miller can pay us for that one. When you're drinking those beers, like part of the appeal is cold and refreshment, and part of how those beers work is that cold kind of does numb your tongue to some of the actual flavor of what's going on.
Right.
And I think High Life actually in that ilk is a pretty tasty beer. But a beer like this, if you have that first numbing experience of cold, like from your fridge at 38 degrees or something, like that's going to be too cold.
Yeah.
So cellar temperature is usually like 45 to 55, somewhere in that range is I think appropriate. I wonder if they actually, some brands actually put it on their packaging, like a suggestion for temperature. It doesn't look like they do.
Yeah, I made sure. Nope. I got this one off the shelf instead of out of the cooler. And then I put it in the fridge for like maybe an hour. And it's like perfect right now.
Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
I also really love drinking like huge things out of small glasses. And also like, I like this with ice cream too. I like intentionally use a really ridiculously small spoon if I can. And like, just, you know, try to think that I'm eating more of it.
That's good.
That's what the tasting glass is about over here.
Sounds very European of you. Speaking of sweet things and Trillium from earlier, I'm not a huge fan of Trillium, but we just had, my brother brought something to a party recently called like Twice the Daily Serving, and it was a Berliner Weiss, and it was incredible. Like that was, I kind of changed my mind about Trillium altogether. Like I'm willing to try some more now. But it was like one of the, you ever one of those like a naked juices, like they've like Green Machine,
yeah,
or whatever. It was that kind of like that consistency, yep, but it was all raspberry, and it was like sweet, but not sickly sweet. And I sort of put it in one of those like kind of tall flute glasses and would sip on it, which is like not something I normally do. I'm like, whoa. But I would suggest that one. That one was really, really good.
And I've always thought that their dark beer and some of their tart beer was like particularly noteworthy and tasty. But I've never really gotten into their haze particularly, but people definitely love it.
We've got a couple former Jack's Abbey employees who work over there. So
oh, really?
I've stopped by to support some of our, you know, former friends. I guess they're still friends. They're dead to me, but you know.
They can still send you birthday cards if they want to. You don't have to open them.
Yeah, I'm not going to open them. I'll receive them.
Right. Okay. I worked my way through this 12 ounce via this small Michelob Sol glass, and now I'm on my last sips on.
Nice. Yeah, I'm making
my all just drinking out of this big old glass.
Ooh, Dimplestein.
Got this classic
nice choice. Oh yeah, so we've got a Coors Light shaker punch.
Notably, that is the only way to drink a proper imperial stout.
Sorry, I don't know enough. I don't know which. Like, I had this one, but I felt like I didn't know if that was proper or not. This
I think a wine just glass. Drink what out of you like. Although I would say that one would have been better.
Yeah. I'm not getting the full nose.
No, those glasses, the Shaker Pint is probably the least effective beer glass for like aroma appreciation. Yeah. But at the same time, it's better than drinking out of the bottle if you're trying to smell it, because you can't just put your nose into the bottle. So if you're going to drink it, why not support Coors Light? There's actually a lot of reasons not to support the Coors family. So that's
very true. Well,
it's literally the only pint glass we have. So it's like I was trying to find something cooler. This is the best I could do.
No, I think we stick with less cool, and that's, we want the honest expression of the people that we talk to. Coors Light.
Yes. Remind me to Coors bring Light. You a pint glass when I come up to Lowell to go to the Keep. Shout out to the Keep.
Yeah, that place is great.
Which I am gonna go to very soon to get dinner. And I will bring you some beer and a fresh glass for you to drink beer out of.
That sounds wonderful. I'm moving on up. I love it.
This to me does not, this would not be something I would drink in a show experience.
No.
This is a home or like dinner experience kind of beer, especially at 9%, because it doesn't really read as 9% to me. It just kind of goes.
Yeah.
I mean, I drank it pretty quickly. I mean, it's been about an hour, but it went down very easily. And I want to drink the other one that's in my fridge. And I might, because I'm not working tomorrow, so I don't give a shit.
Happy Friday, man.
It's funny because it's got that liquor, like a liquor smell. But then when you drink it, it doesn't, it's just not there.
It's got some like black licorice to it too. It's really nice. It's just a really, really nice beer.
Yeah, I was hoping I would still, because I haven't had it in quite a while, so I was hoping I would still enjoy it. I mean, I guess if I didn't, I would have something else to say, but I am glad that I still like it. It's just, I think I do everything a little too fast. Like I eat and drink way too fast, so getting these like high percentage beers is usually a bad call for me. But this seems like a proper situation. This and like maybe having a party at my parents' house if I'm just like sipping things and trying to act, court. like that's right. I got my shit together.
Another advantage of the small glass, it is a forced reminder of how much you're drinking. Good tips.
So coming back to Horse Hands, are we going to get any new music out of you guys?
Yeah, we recorded one song and that's going to come out in like I don't think I'm supposed to talk about it yet. It's going to come out in kind of an unexpected place. And then we're going to do a full EP. We tried to go into a studio and I don't think I'm a studio person. I need to just be able to kind of sit with it and be able to just add things if I have some ideas. And just having a date and like a window of time to do things is tough. So we're going to record it in our space, but we're actually this time going to get some help. Someone's going to come in and help us with like mic placement and just, how many kilohertz to use and stuff like that. Cause that's just beyond me. I would just go like, it sounds better if I twist this knob 3 centimeters that way. So this person's going to actually give me some tips on what will be effective because
so you're going to get an engineer to help you out basically.
Yeah, that's the fast way to say it, but I wanted to go through hoops. I got hoops to go through.
It's understandable. Well, I think, do you have any shows booked coming up?
We actually do on October 16th, which seems really soon to me. We're playing, I guess there's like a fest, like an all-day kind of festival thing at the Thirsty First in Lowell. So we'll be playing that. And hopefully everyone feels comfortable. It seems like that's a pretty tight spot. So it's going to be hard to keep distance. But I think at that point, most people will be vaccinated. Most people will know how to be responsible. So I'm excited. to get out again. I hope I don't get too excited. Sometimes that's a problem. But I'm definitely looking forward to getting out there again. It's hard to just keep it to ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. I can't wait to go back out and see a show.
Oh man, yeah.
And you know, if you were gonna book yourself a show with O'Brien's, who would you want to play with?
Oh man,
present company excluded. You don't have to pretend to suck up to either of us.
Can I do a past present?
Yeah, of course.
Okay. I guess, well, Heron, number one, they're like my favorite. I love them. Heron, Helms. I'm going with all H's here. I'll stick with the H train. Heron, Helms, Hands and Knees, Horse Hands. I think that'd be a fun
show. Ooh, does Helms bring the lamp or do they have to leave the lamp at home?
I think that's a band member. Yeah, no, the lamp.
All right. That would be amazing.
Yeah, that would blow my mind. And then I guess if we can get Trista Dacuna back. I guess Horse Hands can maybe just watch.
Hista Dacuna? Is that you making them change their name for the night?
Did I say it like that? I meant to say
No, I'm just saying to make it fit the H.
Yeah, because of the H. No policy, I'm not following my own.
We got to fit the H.
I make a rule and I break it.
Out of Joe, unless you have something else to ask, I think that's fucking perfect.
What is your feeling on politics, religion?
Let's talk about cancel culture from now on. See how long we can go.
Yeah, now we're going to get into that portion.
You know what, minority, I can't stand?
Ska people. Thanks. Skeeple.
Thanks for saving us, Joe. That could have gone. Could have gone. Safe.
Yeah, yeah. Just jumped in on that one.
Woo!
Well, hey, man. Thanks for figuring out ways to express yourself via music. It's been fun to listen, and I can't wait to see you in person and listen to you shout at me while in a room together.
Yeah, hopefully,
indoor room.
Hopefully, we'll take turns shouting at each other.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
But
that'd be the dream right now, anyways.
Anyway, thanks for having me on. It's such a privilege, especially after some of those guests. And I wish you guys all the best. I don't know how to wrap thanks, anything man. Up.
It's all good. It's wrapped.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, I think we're already wrapped. I think we've hit the wrapped
point. Okay, good. Sorry, it talks.
If we haven't, everyone should go listen to Amble. That is just a perfect collection of songs that I really enjoy. I remember loving it when you guys released it. So if Dennis puts this in, everyone should go listen to Amble from Horse Hands. Love it. All right, Nick.
Cheers,
seriously,
guys.
This was great. I hope to see you soon. Attack some bonus, strength the wine. Split the neighbor's sides. Shake the grapevine. Huddle stern. Now we'll really exist, yeah. Flush the light into the shroud. You can wash the next down.